la fecha de hoy.
Please. If we can keep the interview in English, it's better for me. Otherwise, it's hard to transcribe and translate. So, we've already discussed the four areas. Any particular one you want to start off with?
Whichever.
Issues or political career or early childhood or family?
Probably the early childhood and family biography.
Okay, well, then let's start with the family. Who are the Espinosas? Where did they come from? What are their names? When did they come? Why did they come?
My father came from Piedras Negras, Coahuila, Mexico. His daddy was killed, I believe, during the time of the 19th century revolution. My dad and his brother were sent to family in San Antonio and back to Piedras Negras. Finally, some of the family located here because of work. I understand there's a lot of work and they kind of settled here. But nevertheless, my father went back to Piedras Negras. He tried becoming a torero. It didn't work out, so since he knew some English, he got hired by a company that was doing highways in Chihuahua, Mexico. And that's where he met my mother, and they stayed in touch. They finally married over there, and he came back to settle here in Crystal City.
Could we get some names?
My father, of course, Rodolfo Espinosa Torres. My mother, Maria Hilda Espinosa de la Rosa.
And did you ever meet your grandparents?
My grandparents, my father's grandmother, I did, Maria Torres. She resided for a long time, or 20, 25 years in San Antonio, and is buried there in San Antonio somewhere. I met my mother's father and mother, and one brother, and some other family over there.
Who were they?
Gabriel and Otila de la Rosa.
In Piedras Negras or somewhere?
No, in Chihuahua. He worked the coal mines all his life, and died of cancer as a result of that. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, didn't work.
Well, you got brothers and sisters. Who are they, and what are they doing now?
My brother, I'm the oldest of the family, ¿verdad? And my brother, Ray Espinosa, he's a principal at Rivera Zavala Elementary. My sister, Cristina, is a teacher at Rivera Zavala. My brother, Gabriel, is a teacher-coach, teaching at Rivera Zavala and coaching with the high school. My brother, Richard, is teaching at Crystal City High School. My sister, Rosie, is JP clerk, and after school runs early childhood center and sales. She's the insurance representative for Horsemen.
Horace,
Horace, man, MANNN. It's a company by and for educators.
Those names are in descending order of when they were born?
No, I think I left out Richard. First me, Ray, Cristina, Ricardo, Gabriel, and Rosie.
Now, Ray, is that Raymond or Raimundo?
Manuel Raimundo. We call him Ray.
Okay. So you're a junior?
Technically, I'm not, because my father was Rodolfo Espinosa. I was Rodolfo Antonio. But to honor him, I always use the name Rodolfo Espinosa Jr.
Okay. So how do you want to be listed here?
Rodolfo Espinosa Jr.
Okay. You didn't put the junior in the signature, but okay. We'll put Rodolfo Espinosa Jr. Tell me, what was it like growing up? Were you born in Crystal City?
I was born and raised here in Crystal City, yes.
Well, then tell me how it was growing up. When were you born exactly, and where? Where did you all live? What did your father do? Where did he work? What did your mother do?
I was born here at probably the Point Dexter Clinic Hospital. And I grew up in the neighborhood of the old swimming pool. From there, when Urban Renewal came, they bought our house, but they did not give us enough money so that we could build one. So we went through the projects, and we're in the projects for 10, 15 years. My father spent his time as far back as I can remember, they had some taxis. You remember the Bracero program was here. They would bring them from Piedras Negras to Cristal during the weekends to Cristal, and at that time when it was profitable, he and his brother had a clothing store where they would sell all the clothes, shoes, and what have you to the Braceros.
That was Manuel?
Yeah, that was Manuel, but my father was in on it too, from what I understand. Y luego after that he became a salesman of religious articles, brillantinas and combs and what have you for the tienditas. Later on, the mental health in Cristal hired him as a social services counselor. In due time, the county hired him as the social services counselor, and he died on the job on August 13th, 1991. My mother initially didn't work until we were grown up. Then eventually she got a job in the cafeterias here in the Cristo Sinapian School District, and then spent the last 10, 12 years of her life as a certified development associate teacher aide for the Head Start program. And we grew up, life was hard on my parents, on us. I tell people that I don't think I had a childhood, you know, because it used to worry me a lot, you know, about my parents and not having enough money. Then eventually migrating up north, you know, en un carrito, toda la familia, el gatito, el perro. The weather over there, you know, the weather on the way over there was bad at times. The work over there sometimes wasn't an assurance. But thanks to God, our 12, 15 years of migration to Montana, North Dakota, where we did beads, and then subsequent to Montello, Wisconsin, where we did lettuce, and then corn in Kleiman, Wisconsin, really helped us. Because there was two parents and three of the kids working all the time, five kids.
How old were you about this time?
When we started going up there, I must have been 12 years old, and until I was a sophomore in college.
So, did you tell me when you were born already?
12/1/49, December the 1st, 1949, in Cristo.
Well, what do you remember about the swimming pool area? What do you remember about growing up in the projects? Or what do you remember about being a minor?
Well, in the swimming pool area, everybody in the neighborhood was poor, trying to survive, living on a day-to-day basis. A ver dónde viajar en la selga, en la labor, del monte, West Texas. The projects, of course, were more comfortable homes from what we had, but nevertheless were not ours. And you know, the struggle went on. My father trying to make ends meet, trying to clothe us, trying to feed us, trying to put us through school. Migrant was hard, but I think that it contributed to shaping up our character, our personality in the future, a combination of volume.
How did it do that?
Well, in that I would see how much my dad would struggle, and personally I would remember my brother and sister saying, hey, we gotta go to school, and this was my mother calling with a point, you know, you gotta get an education, you're gonna be here all your lives and what have you. And then we run into families that had no aspiration of you know, leaving the migrant, and we did, you know, that really made us work hard when we came back to school here, to college. As a matter of fact, what we did is because I was a year older than Ray a year older than Cristina a year older than Ricardo. So can you imagine the expenses for my dad and my mom? But what we agreed is, like, the first year when I was a freshman, I came over and they stayed in Wisconsin until about December. The following year, I stayed and the rest of the kids stayed, but Ray came over. And the following year, Cristina came, and, you know, and we helped each other real well. We would give the money to our mother. She was the business manager of the family.
And so when you were here, where did you work?
When I was here, as a small child and growing up, doing piscas, frijol piscas, clipping onions. I remember working in the tomato fields in La Prar. And then as I grew older, I would work during the weekends at Del Monte. Miscellaneous work, carrying trash cans or keeping the jar or the can, the lines going. Things of that nature.
Did you ever go to the swimming pool?
Oh, yeah.
Were you allowed to?
At that time, yes.
What year was that?
Oh, let's see. I was 12. 60s, about 62. Yeah, we were allowed.
Do you remember when you weren't allowed?
No, I feel like I don't. Mm-hmm. I should know.
Okay. Well, tell me significant memories from going to school. Good or bad? Good teachers, good courses, bad courses, the history lessons, the math, sports, the other kids, English, whatever.
I began school at the grammar school versus other Mexicanitos that began it at the airport.
How come?
My father just fought for it, and finally the principal got tired of la punzada and said, I'll leave it up to the damn teacher. And the teacher left it up to him. The teacher said yes. And my mother would help me a lot with my work. I could compete against the Anglos. I never had any real problems. Because I could outsmart them. I would always hit seat number one or number two, number three. I was better than them all the time for the most part. But where I noted the discrimination was in the junior high, 7th and 8th grade. Especially when Cornejo won, all these Anglo friends that I had, no longer. They would, congregate to themselves, and the Mexicanos to themselves, and I used to notice the divisions. My sophomore year, I had the better grades because the young girl that was there with me, was pregnant, and at the time you got pregnant, you can be the top student. Well, they went to the board. The board made the exception for her, and I think she beat me by 2 points. So slowly I started to recognize. My father would always preach about the system, and you gotta fight it, the gringo. My mother, on the other hand, had some experience working in Chihuahua for the PAN, Partido Acción Nacional. She was a secretary, and she said, you gotta make it slowly. It's a biased country, pero don't fight the system. Learn it, make it work for you. And so we got pretty good preaching from them. At the high school, it was there, the teachers, you could tell, the biases. But in my case, I listened to my mother. Don't make any waves. Make your good grades, study, be punctual, attend. So I graduated from here in 1968. Attended college. Again, there, all I did was dedicate myself to my studies.
Where'd you go?
South West Texas Junior College the first 2 years, and from there to Texas A&I at Kingsfield.
How come you didn't go away right away?
Because I didn't think my parents could afford it, and then the counseling back then is the only kind of advice was the army or go here to a barber school or something like that, so I decided that I'd wait, and all of us, the four older kids, decided we'd go to junior college too. They help our parents, and then we went into A&I, and we got grants and loans and whatever. Well, a little bit different over there because there was a progressive, innovative, liberal psychology teachers, social studies teachers that would help us and point us in the direction.
I take it that going to college was never an option. I mean, it was a given that your parents said you're going to go to college.
Yeah, no, with us, it was never an option.
Okay. Choosing what to be was, when do you remember saying, I want to be lawyer, doctor, astronaut, and what did you end up doing?
Initially, I was tempted in thinking of going to law school, and that's why I graduated with a double major in political science and Spanish.
But that's college.
Yeah.
You certainly thought about this before, no?
Yeah, I thought about it before.
When?
As I was going through high school, but that, out of my volition, and my mother telling me, look, of course you gotta be happy, you gotta wake every wake up every morning. Money's not everything. Of course, I didn't want to look back and the migrant, what have you. I wanted to eventually marry, have my kids, have have for them what I didn't have, you know, some of the basics.
Did you have any mentors or any role models or any particular Chicanos you looked up to at the time, or Anglos?
No, about here and there you had a teacher that, that seemed to really care for you. The Diamantina Rodriguez, Mr. Martinez.
Joe Martinez. Both those were Spanish teachers.
Yeah. Well, Diamantina was my Spanish teacher and Joe was my Spanish teacher. When I got to high school, there was a teacher from Carrizo. Her name was Juarez. I don't remember her first name. She was very inspirational and motivation. In college, Dean Sosa at the time was part of the Brown Berets from Cotula.
Ismael,
yeah. He's now president-elect.
There were Brown Berets in Cotula?
Yeah, from Cotula. Oh, yeah, there was, yeah. And at A&I, Hinojosa Smith, Professor Hinojosa Smith.
Rolando.
Yeah, I think Rolando. He wound up at UT. There was a guy, a psychology teacher, Brinkley or something like that, very. There was a sociology teacher, Torres, también. She made a lot of impression on us, too. But basically, my role model was my mentor in the sense of the advice she gave me, what have you. My mother and the hard work, my father. So along the line, I thought of going to law school. I was checking out the CLEO program back then, Chicano Legal Education Organization or whatever. They were looking at Pablo Avila and Mando Treviño. But when I came back, I was asked to help out with the teaching. So I started to teach, got my certification, eventually my principal certification in manual superintendent, and here I am. I forgot about law school.
Okay, well, that's pretty fast, but let's go back, because you graduated in 68, and of course your classmates were Armando Treviño, who's an attorney in Laredo now, Pablo Avila, who's an attorney and county judge here, yeah, running for re-election, I guess the second, third time, something right, like that, and others. I don't remember all your classmates, but the following year, your first year at Uvalde, there was a big walkout here in Crystal City. What did that do to you, and what did that do to your brothers and sisters that were in the school that you can remember? And what did you do in the walkout?
When the walkout started, Angel, I was in Kleiman, Wisconsin. I didn't get here till the last days, but there was a time when it was my turn to stay till the very end. But when I got here, I participated in the rallies, the marchas. I think my brother Richard was part of the student committee that was kind of spearheading the effort. I think that my parents were involved in the negotiation. I think they were negotiators.
What did you think of all of that at that time, if you can remember?
Because it gave us a lot of pride, you know, because up until then, all we saw was, you know, the white little boys, the white teachers, the white cartoons. You know, in my personal life, it woke me up.
To what?
To reality that we were here. Because up until then, you know, again, because of my studies, because of what I could do, I didn't seem to see the discrimination. I didn't seem to see ourselves as second-class citizens and them treating us like that. I thought that, you know, they always told us, well, it's something that all of us went through, the Italians, the Germans. So now it's your turn, and eventually, you know, so you get up there. But it woke up to the fact that, hey, here we are, you know, and certainly we can be masters of our destiny. We can have Mexicanos on the school board, teachers, city councilmen, county judges, just, you know, set our own agenda and make them look at us and cash in on the American dream empire, you know, better housing, better education, better social services, things of that nature. And from then on, I became a member of Cianos Unidos. From there on, I wound up as president of Cianos Unidos. I ran for commissioner for the city council. Eventually for junior college. That period of time, and the afterwards, a partido, and things of that nature, it really woke me up. You know, just made me a different person. As I look back, you know, if it hadn't been for that, I'd probably be teaching Spanish, you know, and Yuval Irhando and Rudy Espy or something like that. You know. So I decided, because, you know, I was involved in politics, and I love politics. But then I had to decide between the political route and the education, because I couldn't be a superintendent and a politician. So I decided this route because I'm in a position where I can help kids, and I think that we've been able to do that.
Well, let's go back to when were you president of Ciudadanos Unidos?
74, 75.
What was Ciudadanos Unidos? Describe it, or what did it do?
Okay, Ciudadanos Unidos, as I perceived it then and I perceive it now, was kind of like the steering committee organization for the party, for Raza Unida Party. We had membership, we had bylaws, and we endorsed candidates, we endorsed platforms, and they were carried out by our people in the world. The strong arm of the party.
Well, that organization split into two. What was all that about, and why?
I think what really happened was, one, the Anglos left. I think that if they had stayed behind, they would have been the bond that would have kept us together. I think that we started with petiteness, looking at each other, everybody wanting to be chiefs, no Indians. La otra cosa es that the lack of jobs. There was no jobs. Everybody wanted a job. They thought about coming to San Unidos or, you know, going out to vote, carry to the poll, that automatically guaranteed them a job. So I think those were some of the factors that split us up. No había bond, no real bond, you know, because everybody thought that this is the Miguel Perez, the Barrio Clubs, some of our younger guys that had college education. Maybe it was the system, you know. Maybe, you know, the facts, and maybe the system, the way it was.
Well, that caused a split also within the Raza Unida Party.
Right.
You ran for office. You got elected to office, no?
I ran for county commissioner and lost to Elena Diaz by about 6 votes. And then I ran under Raza Unida banner for city council, and I believe I served 2 terms and was mayor 1 year.
You ran against Elena Diaz?
Yes.
In the Raza Unida primary? Or?
Yeah, when we split up.
But I thought she ran in 1972.
Because I was around since then.
And the split already occurred then?
I believe so, yeah, because I ran against her. Or was it later, 74? I don't remember.
No. She ran in 72 and won. I ran in 1974, and I don't think there was anything at that point. I don't know, maybe in the interview some of these dates will get a little better.
Okay.
Well, tell me about getting elected to the city council. Was it still the original Ciudadanos Unidos group that supported you, or was it already a split and you were being supported by somebody else?
I believe it was a coalition. Because initially, I was part of a group that joined with Barrio Club and broke away from the initial and original Ciudadanos Unidos. But then, after a while, in working with the Barrio Club, we came to realize that, you know, what the initial Ciudadanos Unidos felt about them and things of that nature, you know, were true. So we disassociated ourselves from that group, and we came back to the original list. We came to the table to work out a coalition plan with the original Ciudadanos Unidos, and I ran under that umbrella. I believe Olivia Serna, who was the first female mayor, Juan Hernandez, representing the Libres, and myself, Juan. And we probably ran against three other folks.
What year was that, you remember?
No, I don't. Probably 74. Because that's when we did the coalition also with the, for the county. We put together 13, 11 cannons. We swept, and then they came back and stole it from us when they brought that visiting judge, whatever his name was.
And you served two terms?
At the city council, yeah.
What was that like? What did you do, or what was your greatest accomplishment, your biggest disappointment?
Plus, I was new, learning. I was in there when Lovaca shot off our gas. And in a sense, verdad, it was very educational. Pero también very trying, because we did visit with the folks in the community, had community meetings, and the people said, hey, you know, tell Lovaca to go to hell. But then when they shut us off, you know, accomplishments. Well, I guess showing powers that be like Lovaca that we weren't gonna be stepped on, and being there for the needs of the community, La Racita, and trying to work them out. Of course, we soon found out that the needs by far preceded the revenues and the money, and it was very difficult, you know, to keep everybody happy.
Can you explain what the Lovaca issue was all about?
As I understood it then, we had a contract with Coastals, and there's a subsidiary Lovaca. Then all of a sudden they decided to jack up the price. The courts agreed with them. We decided not to pay them. Other communities decided not to pay them, but they did collect the money from the patrons and put them in escrow accounts in the bank. We fought Lovaca, and in due time the court ruled with them. They gave us some time to pay, or they were going to shut down the gates, and then eventually they shut down the gates. We went to Kaysen, Congressman Kaysen, and other folks like that. They closed the doors on us, pero I believe that Edward Kennedy came through with grants and assistance, possibly from charitable organizations. I don't remember specifically. And they brought in stoves where we could use wood and burn a little fire, and eventually help us set up the propane, the setups for propane.
So Crystal City is still without gas today?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants it?
Nobody wants it, and even if we wanted to, it'd be a lot of investment in trying to set up all that pipe work all over again. Plus, people are happy when you compare the prices that one pays for natural gas versus what we pay for propane. Nobody's complaining.
Well, why didn't you continue or run for mayor? Why did you not continue the political career?
Because I opted for the educator. I opted for the educator route. I thought I saw politics taking a lot of time from, not that this job doesn't, but took a lot of time from my wife and my kids. And it was a continual battle over there. Even though that I've had the same situation here in Escuelas, that it was a continual battle for control. No jobs. People thought, in many instances, people thought that just because Mexicanos were in those councils, they could get away on not paying their, you know, their utilities on time and things of that nature. So I said, well, I better go to school, right? And it's been hell too, pero. And you know, later on in '92, I ran for the junior college, and We caught the powers that be as the off guard, and we won. I tried re-election this year around, but they were waiting us and gave us a country quipping.
Well, we'll get to that. Let's go back and pick up a couple of things. While ago, when you used the word punzada, that was your father's nickname, no?
Right.
How do you translate that?
It's a pain.
Pain?
Pain in the butt. Punzada.
Pain. All right. All right. Not earache. Pain in the
ear,
butt.
No.
Okay. The other question is, you've mentioned the wife and kids, but you haven't given us their names when you
okay,
got married,
yeah.
Who they are, you know, where they are.
I married Helen Guzman as soon as she graduated. She'd been my student. As soon as she graduated in May of 75, I married her in August of 75. Then our oldest boy, Rudy, is born to the former Cynthia Rios, and he's now an air conditioning technician. She's working as a teacher aide and going to school under our teacher aid program, where we pay their books and tuition, hoping they'll become teachers here for us, trying to inbreed in-house. They have a little girl, Adriana. She's a couple of years old, and another baby on the way. Then there's Rachel. Rudy's 22, Rachel's 18. Rachel's going to a junior college, and she's trying to, she's going for a master's in computer science. Then my other daughter, she's a freshman. She's going to be 15 in December, freshman high school. And two little ones, Joaquin Espinosa, a nine-year-old in the fourth grade, and Jenny Ann, eight-year-old in the third grade.
Jenny. You didn't mention the freshman girl's name.
Emelina Cristina.
Okay.
Right. And by the way, I named Joaquin after Joaquin Murieta. When I was teaching Mexican-American studies, it made such an impression on me that I said to myself that one of these days I'm going to name one of my boys in the honor of that guy. And of course, later on, I've come to realize that there was a name, también Joaquin, of the Virgin Mary. And so, por los dos lados del nombre. And everybody thinks it's a, I don't know, a special name or whatever. And it goes with a special kid, Joaquin.
Okay. Now, there were a lot of programs that were brought into the Crystal City School District after the walkout. You alluded to one right now where you're helping the teacher aide become a teacher. I mean, that's left over from back when. I mean, the idea.
Right.
Maybe there's federal funds still available. But you were involved in some of those programs. What were those and what did you do?
I got my certification because, again, I was planning and thinking of going to law school. So when I volunteered or agreed to come and teach here, I needed certification. So I finished my certification through the COP program, Career Opportunities Program. Later on, as I advanced in my career, I was director of the COP program for 1 year. Other programs was the master's program that we had here. The Carnegie for superintendents, bilingual programs, vocational bilingual programs. I wasn't directly involved in those.
Well, I remember that you were very upset with not getting selected for the Carnegie program.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Is that what led to you splitting off or pushing you to get the certification to be a superintendent on your own? Or
not
what happened there?
It's okay. From what I understand, I didn't have the 2 years or 3 years of teaching experience. I was lacking 1 year or something like that. But from what I understand, there were some people in the committee, including one superintendent there, Amancio Cantu, just didn't feel comfortable with me coming in to the program. And supposedly I got chefed. But nevertheless, because I went on my own, verdad? I went on my own, and I think I've gone down better than most of those Carnegies. Because while that program had good intentions, it all, nowadays you got some of the programs that they'll never admit to how they got in the program. The intent of the program, which was to take what we thought at the time was qualified administrators, right, and make them into superintendents and possible doctors, place them across the state of Texas, and have a network of Mexicano administrators. It kind of got me upset because I felt that, you know, I had paid my dues, but I think the split, more thing else, I went with the split with my colleagues that went to school and had the degree and whatever. You know, Raul Flores, Ninfa Moncada, Chachi, Jose Luis Valderas.
You mentioned that some of those people today don't have those visions anymore. Can you be specific? I mean, who are we talking about or what has happened?
Well, for example, here in Cristal, we had we have Dr. Bento Perez Carnegie. He's an assistant superintendent. We had Ignacio Ignacio Mata, an ex-superintendent, he's teaching. Victor Lopez, ex-Carnegie, he's here as a business person. You have Juan Orona, ex-Carnegie, he's an risk coordinator. You have Richard Gatica, ex-Carnegie, he's a librarian. These people say, we're going to get in the program and we'll go wherever we get sent. And all these people at one time or another were in line hoping to become superintendents here in Cristal. When that didn't seem feasible, but they just settled for whatever jobs came. And then, in my opinion and my perception of what I thought the program was about, one for some, you know, 6, 7, 8 from Cristal to come back and become stagnated here.
Could it be that they just don't want to leave Crystal City?
Possibly.
Because there was some observation once that a lot of people after the walkout and after the split said, no, this was all about getting us in these positions, so we got them, so that's it, it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
There was musical chairs here for a while.
Yes, and I know
that. Superintendents changed and they keep recycling. Yeah. Well, you've been very instrumental, though, in all these politics. How do you do politics in Crystal City today, and how was it done back then?
I think back then we did politics on reactions, outcome of elections, on emotions, you know, huevitos. Now, you know, we play more intelligent politics and we come to the table and try to negotiate, try to do ground rules. You know, there's an election and some of us can't agree. Well, let's do ground rules and, you know, two pairs of candidates run. You know. Here at the school, it's pretty much stable. The judge is he served, I believe, 2 terms and now seeking re-election after winning in the Democratic primaries. The city still has the problems where they change city often. But even at that, it's a little more what I call intelligent politics. For example, let me give you an example. Severita Lara was going to run here for re-election as mayor 2 years ago. And everybody was ready for her to run away, to run again, you know, because they had some type of payback. Severita very, very cleverly pulls out at the end, and they fouled 2 young teachers. And that organization, that group of political folks, won the election. Had Severita won, I could almost tell you, had Severita and her companion run, I could almost tell you they would have been wiped out. But they played smart. It's different, and there's not that animosity that was there before. You know, you split this way or split that way, and you know, even families were broken up. But after a while, people shake hands, and they might be upset or what have you, but life goes on. So
who are the movers and shakers now?
Pues ahorita the county judge, Pablo Avila, at City Hall, we have a new mayor, Frank Moreno. He's kind of like the mover and shaker over there.
This is the son of the former JP?
Sí. La Justicia.
That's his nickname?
Yeah, we used to call him as little kid La Justicia.
Oh, the older man.
The older man, yeah. Señor is a retired Air Force retiree. Severita is very influential todavía. A key player is the vice president of the bank, Zavala County Bank. The bank is owned by Doug Briscoe and Uvalde. And he's a key player. As a matter of fact, he's a Republican. Yorita, they're running 6 candidates. One for county judge, 2 for commissioners, 1 for JP, 1 for Texas as a collector, and maybe another JP.
That's a full Republican slate, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is.
And these are all Mexican-Americans?
Yeah.
former Raza Unida people?
Half of them, yes. The other half is...
Which one?
Gracie Gallegos, running for JP. Although, you know, it's the Familias Perez. And Dalile Perez, and Guadalupe Perez, Odilia Perez Guerrero, Raza Unida. But they're running Republican. They say that it's not so much the party, but the party's a vehicle so that people can have a choice.
Who's running for county judge?
Against Pablo Avila, Jesse Guerrero, the former mayor. He's a young man, born and raised here. Again, his family, the Guerrero family, Carmen and Jesse. All the Guerrero families, they were with me in Raza Unida.
That's not related to Frank Guerrero, the former commissioner.
Two, three, maybe. They might be third cousin or something like that.
Is he still active around?
He ran in the primaries for commissioner, came in third of a slate of about four or five. And, you know, he's not the old Frank that we knew in that he was very influential and had his foot in the door, the city, the county, the state level. He's trying to make ends meet with his refrigeration company. And the prior chiefs, the chiefs between the Najera and the Najera backers and the Matthew Mahaislets, the Alejandro Perez.
Still.
And Batesville, the Vasquez family, and you have Felipe Torres over there. As a matter of fact, he's our current JP over there, but he got defeated in the primary.
Who defeated him?
I believe a fellow by the name of Apellido Nava, maybe Raymond Nava, one of the Nava folks.
What happened to the Barrio Club?
They're still there. They still pulled the 300-400 votes. Pero Turi Gonzalez, ¿verdad? Who was on the school board that initially gave the control to Raza Unida, this time around ran for JP, he ran for chair. He got defeated by an unknown in politics, my sister-in-law, Josie Espinosa, convincingly. Other players, of course, new people like David Lopez, nunca metió la política, but he's now commissioner, Pilo Vasquez. He was commissioner, defeated by David, he's not running for JP. On the school board, we don't have the type of politics that we used to have. It's pretty much conducive to letting the administration run with their goals and objectives, and trying to get the kids as best an education as we can with the least amount of taxpayers' money.
Is the school district better off now than it was before?
In what sense?
Budget-wise, personnel-wise, dropout-wise, college placement-wise?
Overall, we are, but we still have a long ways to go. As a matter of fact, all our campuses, the first to third campus, hit 70% of the kids pass the test scores, which is a minimum skills test. We had the same thing at BJ, 70s and 80s. We had the same thing at high school. 2 years ago, Rivera Zavala got recognized. It was a recognized school by Texas Education Agency. The school that we've been having problems with but we believe that this year that'll change, has been flying. Only half of the kids pass. We still have the drop situation. What's different now is that we have all kinds of recovery programs. The young girls get pregnant. We have the pregnancy and parenting education program. As a matter of fact, some of those kids are on the verge of dropping out. They have their babies, then they come back with a commitment to an education like never seen before. And we desegregate data, ¿verdad? Hispanic, black, Afro, migrant, esto y lo otro. We throw the girls in there too, and they do real good. We have an alternative school where all kids are given a second chance. It's a self-paced curriculum, and kids do better over there. We have an initiative with the junior college for GED. We have our own in-house GED. So we have those programs in place that nowadays are more effective. Budget-wise, for the last so many years, we've had a surplus in the neighborhood of a million plus. The turnover is of teachers, I would say, 7-8%. When before we saw, you know, half of the people leave in 1 year, 60, 70, 80, 90. We have stability in the superintendency. I'm beginning my 14th year in Vista. When in the past, you know, I think we had a 7-8 superintendent, made one acting superintendent from 71 to 81. A lot of our kids are going to college. As a matter of fact, most of our motivators and guest speakers for whatever are ex-students. Your Tony Guzman, who's now a doctor in Corpus Christi. Christy Rodriguez, a well-known attorney now in San Diego, California. Virginia Menchaca just graduated from medical school in Houston. Toby Guerrero chose to be a priest. The second vice president of Zavala County Bank, Sandy Cardenas. We're very proud of some of our graduates. And this is not necessarily from this administration, but some of the kids from back, you know, back in the early Raza Unida days. I believe the openness of the system, bringing in maestros mexicanos, counselors, really helped, regardless of what people say. I had a DEC visit here a while back, and we had a district effectiveness and compliance, but Texas Education Agency, where they come and check our planning, district planning, all the do's and don'ts about the different programs, state compensatory education, state bilingual, migrant, etc. And we had an Anglo lady from East Texas, and she was very upset because we had young folks on the board. And I asked her, I said, you know, do you know who Doug Briscoe is? And of course she went wild, and she knew about Uvalde. She knew about Uvalde being the home of ex-Vice President Gardner, the continuity and stability there, the kind of power. But when I asked her, do you know that every year our exit level kids, TAS exit level kids, do better than the Hispanic exit level kids? You know, and we compete with them in everything. It's still pretty much open, and I think it's helping our kids a lot.
These 14 years of superintendent have not been all in a row.
No, I was here. I was acting superintendent for about two, three months in 79. Then I became the superintendent in 81, July 81, and I resigned in August of 88. Because that year we had done real well, not only in academics, but co-curricular, extracurricular. Our task, and at that time we weren't just comparing Hispanics with Hispanics from other communities. We were comparing our Hispanics with the Anglos and Hispanics from Jordantown, Pearsall, and we weren't there with everyone. Our cross-country teams that year, the boys were third in state, the girls, champions, and all active migrants that made kind of headlines all over the United States. Our football team was winning games and beating, you know, communities like Divine and Pearsall that, you know, for the longest time we didn't beat. We're doing well in basketball. In the spring sports, we sent a girls doubles team again, risk kids and migrants, and they lost in the semifinals. And in volleyball, we lost in the semifinals. We're doing real well. And then the community, you know, again, you know, the superintendent's a dictator, he forces people to do this. We were just holding people accountable. So I left for La Praia, I was in La Praia 4 years. Then I came back, you know, even though I've had other opportunities, I don't know, I just have the need to come here and contribute. So that's where we're at, you know, that's where we're at.
But now your brothers and sisters have all been involved in politics. You're talking about a sister-in-law right now. I mean, the Espinosa family is very involved in politics and
public service.
You're all connected into the school.
We're public servants.
Your brother was a mayor, no?
Ray Espinosa, sí.
Who else has been in elective office around here?
Myself, Ray, and Ray's wife.
Ray's wife is the one of the JP now?
JP, yeah. JP, precinct 2.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about being superintendent in La Prar. That must have been an experience.
Pues allí, it was an experience, I got hired by an Anglo vote, about a 4-3 vote. Within a year, the Hispanics win, and they had the custodians, teacher rates, and bus drivers, custodians at minimum wage. Sometimes they would pay them 30 hours, so they wouldn't pay the insurance, things of that nature. So we changed that right quick. We interjected some curriculum that reflected, you know, Hispanic culture, customs, contributions to the U.S. And before too long, we had it going again. Like here, because we brought some Hispanic teachers and the Anglos that decided to stay there, we did sensitivity sessions for them because we would hire people from out of state. I remember one year we hired a person with a master's in computer science and 45 hours over and beyond that. He came late to Texas. We were probably one of the first ones to offer him a job, and he came on in, and he was teaching a class of risk kids, and, you know, La Racita, and he really got onto them. And you're all supposed to be Texans. You're supposed to have high expectations. So we hooked up to San Marcos. They had some people doing sensitivity sessions, Texas A&I, Kingsville, and we would take them. It seemed to help, you know. They started to do discipline with dignity. We took them out to the homes in La Prar so that these teachers could see the condition, you know, under which some of these kids live, you know. And it made for a better school district.
You mentioned this cultural curriculum. At one time, that was removed from the Crystal City schools. Have you brought it back, or what are you all doing in those areas? Do you have Chicano studies? Do you have any kind of...
We're trying to incorporate it as much as we can into the regular social studies curriculum. Because, you know, like when I taught Mexican American Studies, but we had a unit on the Alamo. We have a unit on the Alamo now, you know, in the state government. So we're trying to incorporate it. We haven't been as successful as I wanted to, because, you know, some of our teachers are the traditional type of teacher that, you know, we came in the Mayflower versus the Mayflower coming to us. It's a mentality, and it's hard to work with. We've been discussing the fact that, for example, we early on, El Partido and the leaders then named that elementary, the elementary that houses the fourth and fifth graders after the Benito Juarez. And yet a lot of times our kids go through there and don't know who Benito Juarez is. Our seniors go to college and come back and learn, very surprised that Jose Angel Gutierrez, blah, blah, blah. And you know, apparently we're not doing our job. Sarita Lara, who was Sarita Lara? Hey, man, you didn't tell us when we were here at the high school, you had let the walk out and told us. We've kind of lost it, but we're trying to get it back on track. I'm trying to locate a guy by the name of Gamboa. He's a freelance writer for Expression News. Supposedly does a lot of that, and see if he can help us put it in place.
Well, you could just...
Well, we could do it ourselves, pero ahorita, por ejemplo, I'm overseeing a construction.
No, I mean the curriculum. You're the superintendent.
Yeah.
You can just do it. Are you all going to celebrate the walkout anniversary, or is that also forgotten?
That's also forgotten, I think. We do very, very little of that. People are saying, well, you know, we're the walkout. ¿Cuál era el libro? We're 16 September. Because people criticize and say, hey, you guys, you know, Cristal, you don't celebrate 16 September, Cinco de Mayo, like Hondo does, or Pearsall, or Uvalde. And our people say, well, we're the same, we're kings, we're in control of our destiny. We don't have to do all that bullshit you do over there, you know. But we need to get back to that and make sure that our kids live with their history, which is very rich, especially a recent history. Right?
Well, it seems like the parents know and are in control of destiny, but the kids don't know, so how can they have a destiny?
But that, yeah, that's true. That's true. So we need to work on that. And up until now, it's been talking and talking and talking, and we really hadn't sit down to say, okay, let's stop the talking. Let's get, you know, let's get busy. Let's incorporate it with our regular social studies and do it. Se acabó.
Dr. Armando Navarro just published a book on Cristal, and apparently it's been selling like crazy here.
Yeah, crazy, yes. It sure has.
Has he been brought into schools, or is there any plan to have a program all on that book? I mean, this is just exciting. It's a book about our town.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the, our curriculum instruction directorate, Ramirez, is reviewing the book and visiting with the social studies committee on developing units and putting it out, you know, in the classroom.
All right, well, let's get to the community college. Why did you decide to go in there? You, when you introduced that a little while ago, you said we took them by surprise. Apparently you were planning something, or you had visions of doing something. What is all that about?
For the longest time, Cristal and Uvalde have gone together, run candidates. We won representation on the junior college. But we could never crack it. They beat us 2-1. My brother Ray, Benito Pérez, Rogelio Muñoz ran. Other people have run before. So then I think that Ezequiel de la Fuente and possibly George Garza and Ben Menchaca filed a lawsuit saying that we just couldn't win, you know, the way things were and what have you. So we had a Republican judge that threw it out and said, look, you know, the record shows that you have 52% of the registered voter, but you as Hispanics and the Anglos 48, so just go back out there, get your shit together and take over the college. So when that happened, we put together a list of 10 names, because you know how that can be. At the time, Alejandro Perez from La Prague was going to run, and Dr. Salvador Gonzalez from Batesville. Well, Alejandro was the campaign manager for Pedro Nieto, who went into the runoff. Pedro asked Alejandro to forget the idea of the junior college and concentrate on his campaign, and I and Ronnie Garza wound up with the muleta. We caught them by surprise because even we did not believe we could win. We said we're going to grassroots, we're going to identify our resources, we're going to see where we do good, and then in 2 years we'll be ready, and then we'll go to the forums and the radio, what have you. And what we agreed to do was just grassroots. After 7, como los Vietnamese, after 7, And they took us lightly because they said Espinosa got thrown out of Cristal. He's there in La Prar. Half of people in La Prar don't like him. Ronnie Garza at the time was about 24 years old. And he's a young punk. His dad is a radical, so don't worry about it. I ran against Mr. Ritchie from here, who has ever since died, and Catherine Hornsby, I believe related to the powers that be, the Briscoe power that be over there. And they didn't put effort into it like they usually do in the nursing homes and los cementerios and everything, where you got people lined up. And by then, I had established real good rapport with an ex-professor of mine, Dr. Goodson, Jimmy Goodson. And he was my government teacher, and he told us how he wanted to be president of the colleges in the future. And I told him that I was going to go the route of superintendent or county judge. So, you know, he took a liking to me, and we would have city councils at City Hall, elections at City Hall for City Council, elections for the school board here, and the junior college would have them somewhere else. So it was too hard for a racita, because sometimes you couldn't find them on the list here or there, and they just gave up. So we started visiting, and we sold the idea to the board to allow us to consolidate the school district and junior college, so that helped us a lot. So actually the issue, we won. Initially, and right away we got together, you know, see how we could give the college more of an Hispanic flavor, instead of puro gringos, enseñando allí, even the Hispanics that were there were Clannish and Cocos, and we broke that through a lot of pressure. 2 years later, Bobby Lopez from Uvalde won, so that was three of us. Rudy Flores, Hispanic, was and is the president of the board, pero it seems to me that Rudy feels that I came up the status quo, why should I change now? Because a lot of times we had the three votes and the opportunity to make some drastic changes, and he wouldn't come through. It's the one of the things that we worked on immediately was for attention and special attention to the needs of Christians in Isabela County and Hispanics in other areas. When I came on that board, the junior college was registering kids in Carrizo, because they said that up to now Crystal City didn't cooperate, okay, we didn't have the setup for the computers, and I knew there was a bunch of bullshit because I was the superintendent here, and I knew that if they weren't there, we could deliver. So finally, they came over here, and plus they said people from Eagle Pass won't come to Crystal, Carrizo. They came. So after about a year of being there, we had about 18, 20 classes here. And not only 18 or 20 classes here, but at least 2/3 of the teachers were our own teachers here. So that helped a lot for the kids, you know, for them to travel over there and what have you. Lulek, came on in and asked the junior college board to name a building or two after Hispanic, after deserving Hispanics. And I was glad to see Lulek doing a little more than socializing. But anyway, that's what they did. And at the time they went ahead, the committee that was there named the building after me. They said I was deserving, the superintendents in my record and everything. But over the time, I've come to believe that they used me. They used me in trying to get me to kind of like take it easy, because they would tell me, Mr. Espinosa, what you want and what you don't want, but you got to take your time, it takes a little time. And there was another name being considered, which was your name, and I think they used me to block that particular name, because it's the same people that gave me all the credence in the world and named the building, when I ran, turned my back on me. And I attended 98% of the meetings. Only on 4 damn times did I dissent. But I was very demanding on, you know, Hispanics being hired for the professor chiefs and administrative positions, not only for custodians and cafeteria workers. But nevertheless, we caught their attention. We fought for a senior down here, and the senior is here. We fought for short-term courses like a class in which kids have the opportunity to obtain their license to drive 18-wheelers. You know. Some of our families drop out or get the GED, marry, have 3-4 kids. You know, they can go through 2-4 years. And they were very successful in that. I think in a span of 2-3 years, we graduate 90 kids. We would graduate them every 10 weeks. And the last report that I had, about 95% of kids had gotten jobs in excess of 30, 35. And that trade, is the need is there now, and probably will continue to be there with NAFTA and initiatives.
But they leave Crystal City, no?
Well, not necessarily, because some of these companies will allow you to bring the truck. You travel to Monterrey, Dallas. Not necessarily, but in some cases you will have to.
Is a college term a 6-year term?
It is.
So you served 6 years?
6 years.
Now, how much money did you spend? We haven't talked about money. I mean, back then when you ran for city council, how much money did you spend back then?
Hardly anything, because I think Ciudadanos Unidos came up with it.
Okay, but you ran for this community college, how much money did you spend?
The first time around, I spent about $2,500. And again, because we opted to go quiet, we didn't want to get on the radio, we didn't want to get in the newspaper, we did not attend their forums.
How did you raise it? How did you raise it?
Donations, fundraisers, barbecues, and menudos, things of that nature.
Now, the community college is an at-large district.
It is.
And 2 seats come up every 2 years.
With the exception of 1 year.
There's
three seats, yeah, and that'll happen.
It's a 7-person board.
Yeah. In 2 years, we'll have three seats up for grabs. This time around, we tried a little different approach. We opened it up. We advertised in the paper. We came out in the radio. We worked the Lakeys and things of that nature. I spent $15,000.
$15,000?
Yeah.
Where'd you raise it?
Through friends. Donations. Throughout, you know, my career, verdad, we've helped, we've opened the doors to Hispanic architects, to Hispanic auditors, and then liberal lawyers, you know, like the Hertz or our appraisal district in Texas, the Lincoln attorneys. And
this also suggests that you have a network across the district. This is three counties.
Yeah.
Zavala, Uvalde, and
Real. Uh-huh.
So, do you have contacts all the way up there? Are you all together?
We have very little contacts in Real because apparently in Real County, they have a monopoly over the jobs, the banks, and people are afraid.
Still.
In Batesville, we found out that the 3 days before the election, you know, they gave the people a lot of work doing onions and things of that nature. Wednesday, no work. Thursday, no work. Friday night, they came to the people and said, there's a lot of work, not only for the Clippers, but for the wives and the kids. When people said, how about voting? They said, you choose, because we got a lot of work. So if you come to work, you're not going to vote. Last time around, we got about 150 votes there, and this time we got about 37. So some of the old tactics.
But you could have gotten them to go over early.
Well, we did, but they said, no, we'll go to the daily election. Those people don't go until the daily election. You know, chingaron, because, you know, they put them to work.
So what are you going to do in 2 years when the three are up? Because you've got one person in there anyway.
But we're thinking of putting a slate together of people, maybe somebody from here. But we need to have somebody from here, one from Uvalde, and possibly one from, if we can find somebody from there, and go at it again. It's coming.
Are you going to run again?
I don't know. I'm getting it due in serious consideration, but I'm getting older. And
do you want to run again?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think I'm going to switch from the sword to the cross.
Well, why did you get beat? You already told me a couple of stories here. You spent $15,000. Who beat you? How did they do it?
What they did is they got a local physician, very well-known physician, Raza family, to run against Ronnie Garza. That's Dr. Antonio Rivera, the husband of Gloria Rivera. And
she works at the college.
She works at the college, and they were grooming her for president.
Does she have any degrees?
Probably a master's. We got together and we found that because of my position here, superintendent, I couldn't do too much hassle-dazzle against Dr. Rivera in the open. You know, we had to low-key it. We talked to him and tried to get him to get out. We said, hey, in 2 years, there's some Anglos coming. You know, why don't you run against them? Ronnie has done a good job, and why don't you wait? No, he said, no. And then they had promised me, the establishment over there had promised me they weren't going to run anyone. So I wasn't really ready. What happened was that James Mahaslett from the prior, and now an attorney in Uvalde, decided to run against the only Anglo in Uvalde, a guy by the name of Cody Smith. And then they said, unless you use your influence with your friends in Uvalde and pull him out, we're gonna run somebody against you. And I thought they wouldn't find somebody suitable. They got this surgeon, Dr. Watkins, who's the brother of the chair Watkins. And I think in essence we kind of beat ourselves. The Uvalde people were very leery with us. They thought, okay, perhaps behind the scenes, Dr. Rivera and I were together. And then Dr. Watkins put in a lot of money also, and I raised the money, pero I kind of shotgunned it. We decided that Crystal, we took Crystal and Zavala County for granted. We said, you know, we just walked it through several times, but let's concentrate our efforts in the Sabinas, Quinipa, Lakey. And it kind of backfired on us. Even though we got a high number of votes here, I think that had we worked a little more, we might have. And also something else they did, they ran a young Mexicano for the same place where I was. So it was two Hispanics and Watkins. And he took away from me 1,700 votes. So back to the old tactic, you know, two Mexicanos, one Anglo. And with all the experience that we have, you know, because Mayor Garza, ex-Mayor Garza, Gilbert Torres were in with us, and nos pescaron con los pantalones para abajo. So the thinking now is que we have been visiting, they filed a writing candidate against Gilbert Torres, who's a Democratic nominee. We've been getting together and working to see if we can get him elected, and then as soon as we get him elected, begin to dialogue, you know, because supposedly Tracy King is going to run for senator, Seferini is not going to run, and then they've got a couple of Anglos from Uvalde wanting to run for Tracy's position, and we got to be very ready, very, very ready. We got the votes, we got the damn votes, you know, we just got to get it organized and executed and then deliver once we're in office.
I did not understand this reference to James Buck Hazlett. Did he run for the community college board also?
No, James ran. James ran for a city council position where the incumbent was an Anglo, and the only Anglo on city council. So they wanted to have at least that pipeline because, you know, while Gus Newtzi from Uvalde was running against Mayor Garza, there was no guarantee he was going to win. So the Anglo establishment and community said, well, cuando menos tenemos a Cody Smith, why run James Mahasley? Mahasley is from the Mahasley in the prior Mexicano. And so at least that's what they tell us, because Watkins filed 15 minutes before the deadline at 4:45.
You also said that James Mahasley was the only Mexicano lawyer in Uvalde?
No, that he is from La Prior, but has gone to Uvalde and one of the Mexicano lawyers in Uvalde.
Well, is there any other aspect of politics in your political career? Because, you know, we've gone through all the races, and we've gone through all the events. Is there anything else in the area of politics? Do you belong to political organizations today? Is there a Ciudadanos Unidos equivalent today?
No.
Is there a LULAC or GF Forum? Do you belong to any of that?
No.
Do you belong to any of the statewide organizations?
No.
Do you belong to any professional associations?
Yes, I do.
Which one?
The American Associate School Administrators, the Texas Association of School Administrators, basically traditional, conventional. There's a strong Hispanic organization from Houston for administrators, but most of their meetings are so far away, you know, I can't make it. Mm-hmm. Pero, I'm not involved with LULEC, I'm not involved with NALEO. We attended a workshop convention in New Mexico for Naleo, and when those people found out we were from Crystal City, kind of like, you know, we were demons. They give the coach over. I never asked why. We went to our work sessions and then we just came back. Pero I do belong to the typical statewide organization for superintendents and administrators.
Are you saying that these elected officials in Naleo, because you were from Crystal City, gave you a cold shoulder?
Well, there was a perception. At that time, Neto Salazar and Carlos Mahasley and I attended, and there was a perception. You know, the minute they heard they were from Crystal City, and they would ask questions about Barreras Unidas, Juan Diego Gutierrez, it seemed that, you know, they were turned off by us. It seemed that way, you know. We could be wrong.
Okay, well, is there anything else on politics?
Not politics, but public service. I served on the Council of Governments for about 10 years. I was Raza Unida party chair, party, not the, the chairman, but a precinct chairman. Este, back then I was on the board of directors of the Urban Renewal. And for a while there, I was the chairman of the Community Supervision and Corrections Department Task Force for Maverick, Dimmitt, and Zavala counties that gave the district judge in charge of that particular department as team put.
Well, tell me about the Council of Governments. 10 years, that's people from all over the area.
County judges, mayors, a member at large, a representative from the schools, representative from the hospitals. In the 10 years that I was there, I really didn't see much done. Early on when you were there and I was there and Leodoro was there, había el Mexicano fried by the old guard, you know. I remember he used to say, well, you know, we've been here since the Depression days, you know, it's a good idea, but, or they turn you down. Eventually, I saw some progress when you became second or third vice president. But then after that, Angel, I would see them go to Asia, go to Italy, do economic development surveys and studies, and they would go on the shelf. All we would do is hire kids and people to train. But then after the training, there was no jobs.
Isn't Leodoro Martinez now the head of that?
He is the new executive director, and he's trying to give it a new direction. He's trying to find ways where not only do you do your surveys and then formulate them into plans of action and then implement them. He's really looking for ways to see if he can bring economic development to the areas.
Is it based in Uvalde now? Or Carrizo?
Carrizo, with some of the offices in Uvalde. We brought it to Carrizo back when, it must have been my 7th year. We had problems with the leadership in Del Rio, used to be in Del Rio. So we brought it to Carrizo.
Why does this Mexicano area have an Anglo state representative, Tracy King?
Because we just don't get our shit together, por eso.
But nobody even runs against him.
Well, Mr. Luevano did.
But that was at the very beginning.
No, esta vez nobody ran. I don't know why. It was a representative. It was a district, in my opinion, that is there for a Mexicano representative. Back then, the best we could do was get Pedro Nieto elected. Then in the middle of the term, or sometime during the term, he turned cold on us and went Republican. So then he ran Republican, Tracy ran Democrat, and he lost. This time around, Tracy has no opposition whatsoever. An observation that I made during the elections is that Tracy can come into our barrios and eat our menudo and our tamales and we'll clap him and what have you. Yet when we ran our campaign, we try to go in the Anglo community, and they would slam the doors on us. You would see the police cars passing by and telling us that, you know, asking us, what are you doing here? And some of these people don't care for some of these sets, you know, and they know who they're going to vote for and things of that nature. I guess my observation is that while things have changed, you know, it's still, you know, they can come here, but we can't go over there. It's still a quite war, believe it or not. Well, and you know that.
Who is the most effective Mexican-American leader today?
In this area?
This area, the state, the nation?
Either... Where we, the Mexicanos here in Cristal, would get some direct or indirect benefit, or somebody that makes impact? No.
Well, just a straightforward question. Just who is the most effective Mexican-American leader today?
Effective in what sense?
You define it. All right. Who's the best leader that we have in the Mexican-American community or for Mexican-Americans? If it were 20 years ago, I bet you would pop off Cesar Chavez,
José
or, you
Gutierrez,
know, so on and so on.
Porky,
same today.
Reyes Tijerina. either I haven't kept abreast of what's going on nationally, or there's not that many. I don't know. No, I couldn't name you one.
Okay. Most effective Mexican-American organization today?
In this area, it seems that LULEC has evolved from the socializing to, you know, trying to get some issues put forth.
Is there a LULEC chapter here?
LULEC here? No, it's in Uvalde.
Uvalde. What is the most pressing issue facing Mexican-Americans today?
In this area, the country, the state.
Take your pick, all three.
In here, chambas, jobs, economic development, because until that happens, even though we have our destiny in our hands, it's not going to happen. Everybody's fighting for jobs and needs. The Ford Foundation came to Uvalde, to the junior college, and did some work there in trying to assist and promote economic development in the area, taking all the assets of all these counties and all the county. They were astonished to see that 70% of the people residing in the Uvalde, Winter Garden area have a median income of $7,500. But the needs are pretty much the same, I would say. There's still a lot of need for better education, housing, the jobs, like here in Cristal, we still don't have a hospital. I don't know that we ever will. We'll go to Carrizo, they'll see us, pero they feel kind of like, here come these people from Cristal. Leaders that can put the people together, and that people can have trust in them. We get them elected, and then they represent us over there in Austin or D.C. No leaders. There's no leaders in the area. There's a vacuum. There's no leaders.
I know that Crystal City has a limited number of blacks, African Americans, but you are knowledgeable about things in the country and the state. What are the underpinnings of tension between blacks and browns?
Here in Cristal, of course, none, pero you read about community in California, where blacks might be the majority, and then they treat Hispanics and Anglos like they were treated. You read about what's going on with the Dallas School Board. I know that the blacks seem to be very united, something that I feel we're not.
Okay. What about relationships between Chicanos and Mexicanos from Mexico? How is that playing out here? There's more people now here from Mexico than Chicanos, no?
Probably so, pero I don't know that the once established line of communication and interest is here. I don't know that it's here. Maybe in San Antonio. I know that we used to have council visit us, come to our parades. In return, our bands would go to some of their functions over there.
That's all stopped.
Non-existent.
Some of the school districts along the border and a county into the border, like Zavala, they complain that there's too many undocumented children, that they're having to spend too many dollars on them. Is that true here?
Not necessarily. What we are getting a lot of is that the last 2 years, these children of families that are coming from all over the state, because there's some waivers. We're from what I understand, we're a waiver county for some of the welfare reforms. You know, we're going to be given more time. So some of these people know that Mary County, Zavala, La Salle, so they're moving on. Last year we had 200 families like that come here. And this year we already see close to 100.
So this is the waiver from the requirement that you must get a job, mm-hmm, or they'll cut off the welfare.
Yeah.
So you don't get a job because there are no jobs, so you get extended on welfare.
On welfare. They're creating a super county of welfare.
What about relationships with Puerto Ricans or Cubans? So what do you think the underpinnings of tension or problems between Chicanos and Cubans and Puerto Ricans are, if any?
I'm not familiar with any. just whatever in the newspaper. You know.
Well, looking back at all of this history, what would you do differently?
Myself? It's been fun and I've been successful at it, so I don't know that I would do it differently, you know.
In all the positions that you held, city and in community college, you called it public service and you listed some other things you do. Why do you do what you do? Why do you do this?
Because, you know, I've been successful, Angel, and I thank you, the Raza Unida Movimiento here, that really opened my eyes to the fact that, hey, you know, we can go to school, we can learn, we can be masters of our own destiny, we can be lawyers, we can be doctors, we can be teachers. And through the years, I've established qualifications that will appeal to the voters, and people come to me and others, and you know, that's my way of contributing back to the community and to the area.
So that's the answer? You contribute, that this is your contribution back?
Yeah.
There was an article here about, I guess, two weeks ago in the Washington Post. The headlines in different newspapers had different headings, but one I saw came out of the San Jose Mercury, and it said, Chicano town wants to change its radical image. You think Estacio has a lot of stigma?
Not as much, but it's still there. I remember that when I was in La Prar, back in 91, 92, I was traveling with the Texas Education Agency as a peer evaluator. And I had my La Prar tag, and people would ask me, how far is La Raza from you? And well, it's there. Has it changed? Yeah, it's there. And they would treat me, you know, like one of them and what have you. The following year, I come back to Cristal 92, 93. The same Rudy Espinosa, the same person that had been commented as one hell of an administrator, forget a qualified Mexican-American administrator, but administrator with the Crystal City Tech, ahí estaba el kind of like, el apprehension.
Well, of course, that's what Anglos would do, and that's normal, but how come people from Cristal don't fight back and aren't proud of what happened? Everybody claims that the movement, the walkout, the party changed their lives for the better. How come they don't tell the world?
Como, how come who don't tell the world? We?
The people that pledges yourself and others say that the movement changed their lives, that the partido helped them, that they got opportunities here. How come they don't tell the world?
I know I do it every turn, okay? But some of these folks, some of these other folks, they don't. They blame the movimiento for the lack of socioeconomic development or whatever, you know. No sé, I don't know.
Is that true?
No. Because, you know, you left El Platito Servido aquí, and you know, like at the schools, you know, we've been able to make some gains, a whole bunch of gains. We were declining for a while, but we were losing about 25 families every year. This year we're projected to go down to about 1725 ADA. We're at 1900 already. So people are seeing that we're doing some things better than other schools. So not only do they move here for welfare exemptions, but they know the schools are better schools than maybe some of these other schools. Because while you might have brown faces there, they're only replacing the Anglo face, but the same as the same philosophies, you know, Columbus came to America, our forefathers, when we know better, you know, America came to us, to the blacks, to the Indians, and that's one of the major reasons that the struggle still continues.
I don't have any other questions. Is there something that you want to say on this interview? Because this is an archival interview, and it's okay. Going to be there forever. And any materials you send later can be added there, because it's a personal archive. Or closing statement, or anything you want to say?
About the only thing I want to say is that that Hispanics need to be cognizant of the fact that, well, things have changed, or not, maybe in Cristo completely, in Carrizo slowly, Pearsall now has a complete city council Mexicano, your county officials, school board. We gotta remind people, especially Hispanic people, of what happened in the past, so that it will not occur again. Because even though the Anglo will tell you, well, you know, things are changed, we want to work, there's still a lot of that where it's not going to change, and unless we make a change. And I see a lot of communities, Hispanics and Anglos, coming to the table, and the Anglo will say, well, you can have the chair, you can have the commissioners, you can have city hall, but they keep the schools, which is very important. And we need not forget, we need to develop leaders. And while some of the people that have benefited from the efforts of the Gilbert Torres are saying, hey, it's time for him to go. La tata loco, y que vino, se le olvida quien les abrió la brecha. So I got no problems in working with them, at the college, I think I stayed with every one of them in every issue. Being a board member, it's my line of work here, ¿verdad? Just que la racita no se le olvide y sigan para adelante. And we're not getting what we've gotten because they've handed it to us. It's been through efforts like you and Reyes Tijerina and Corky and the Tafoyas and the Torres and the Virginia Muskies, que they had no choice but hand it over. And it's coming, At the junior college, they can only stop it maybe two more years. This coming time. But in 4 years, it's coming. And that's what I see, that they've been doing wrong a lot of times. They don't allow Hispanics to come into the city council or to the school board. And then when they get in, empieza el pedo y el payback time, when we could hand it over, let us... Because, they criticize us a lot. What has Cristal done? Well, But, we've done some good things, but if anything else, el destino in our hands. And I would tell the youngsters to study, en lugar de andar ahí en las gangas and drugs and things of that nature.
Are those serious problems here?
The problems are here, but not as serious. Not as here in San Antonio and Eagle Pass and places where they have killings and stabbings. We had some Uvalde coaches come coach at our high school, and they're saying how the climate is different here at the high school. At our junior high, we gave the administration additional people to work with the risk kids. Ahorita, there's no kids in ISS, there's no kid in the alternative school. Only about 64 kids fail one subject or two the first 6 weeks. Parental involvement, the parents need to get involved. Y a ver qué pasa, a ver qué pasa.
Well, I want to thank you for the interview.
Okay, thank you. I thought I'd